done, and the rest is up to you both.
He turned.
Whether to change yourselves will be your decision to make.
Durand and Frey looked at each other. Durand and Frey walked through the corridors of the monastery in bespoke black tie and dinner jackets, the attaché case of rubies handcuffed to Durand's left wrist. Both men were immaculately groomed, with Durand's head shaved close and Frey's unruly mane for once tamed. The laser scanner made for a perfect fit with their clothing in every dimension. Durand had to admit it was a good look. It made him feel confident, as daunting as their task seemed. Frey brushed something off his sleeve. Black tie, unusually old school. It's what the invitation requires. They passed a young monk in saffron robes who ushered them toward a rear entrance. They moved through kitchen areas until they emerged behind the monastery, where an electric Maybach limousine awaited them. Standing next to it was Thet, dressed in a chauffeur's uniform with a cap. He smiled.
Good evening, gentlemen. You look quite prosperous.
Thet opened the rear door for them. Frey climbed into the back seat. Durand stopped and gripped Thet's shoulder. You don't have to do this. Thet shook his head.
Not for you, Mr. Durand. For me. For my people. You need to succeed. I will get you there.
Durand nodded. Another squeeze of Thet's shoulder, and he got inside. Thet slid into the driver's seat. Frey reclined in back.
I could get used to this. Thet, where on earth did you get hold of this car?
He looked into the rearview mirror.
Many foreigners come. Some make bad decisions.
With that ominous-sounding comment, Thet brought the car silently forward, down the monastery's drive, falling in behind a black SUV. Another just like it came up behind them, completing the appearance of a VIP security detail. Durand couldn't see through the SUV's blacked-out windows and had no idea who was coming along with them. Frey grabbed a scotch from the minibar. He raised his glass.
Here's to good fortune.
Chapter 39. They drove for nearly 40 minutes, passing through rural military checkpoints without difficulty. Durand didn't know whether that was because they were well-dressed in a chauffeured million-dollar car with security escorts, or whether the soldiers were disloyal. In between the checkpoints, they passed burned-out military vehicles and bullet-riddled police stations. In the distance, he could hear occasional gunfire and explosions. To maintain appearances, Thet had closed the glass partition between them. Durand pressed the intercom.
Thet, are those Shan forces?
Thet's voice came over the speaker.
No. Some fighting every night. Army, rebels.
Durand gazed out the window as they entered the capital itself. Here, the depth and complexity of the military cordon increased. Their leading and trailing security SUVs parted ways with them, returning back the way they'd come. Thet brought the Maybach toward the city, slaloming between speed bumps and concrete blast walls. Their car was scanned by automated devices. Mirrors were passed beneath its undercarriage by soldiers as well. But soldiers did not request Durand and Frey's papers. Instead, they would briefly shine lights into the passenger compartment, only to see the case handcuffed to Durand's wrist as he held up the Hulijing fob. Another flash onto his face and black tie attire, and their car was invariably waved through. Apparently, the Hulijing did not like their clients hassled and had the connections to make that so. Beyond the concentric rings of military checkpoints, the Maybach finally reached the modern, wide, but nearly deserted city streets. Well-lit signs proclaimed in Burmese and English that they had arrived in the capital city, Naypyidaw. Suddenly, the battered LFP glasses Durand had picked up at Vegas's penthouse chirped from his pocket to indicate an internet connection was available. It was the first time in days. He and Frey exchanged surprised looks.
Civilization.
Frey pulled a pair of LFP glasses out of his own coat pocket. Might be interesting to see what's transpired while we've been in the Middle Ages. He started flipping through screens only visible to him. Don't connect to any accounts linked to you. I was evading the law well before I met you, Agent Durand. Besides, I'm just checking news feeds. A thought occurred to Durand. He put on his own pair of LFP glasses and opened the device's messaging client. He decided now was probably his last opportunity to send a message. He was, after all, still an Interpol agent. Durand couldn't recall Inspector Ayanna Marcotte's old-time email address, but he remembered her saying she used it because she wanted to be reachable by impoverished, trafficked people, which meant it had to be discoverable. Using a proxy, he did a brief search for Marcotte's name and title, and soon found her public email address and PGP key. He then began typing a message with the virtual keyboard. Detective Inspector Ayanna Marcotte. The trail to Marcus Wicks has led me to Naypyidaw, Myanmar. The Hulijing is headquartered here, taking advantage of ties to the military to hide in plain sight. Tonight, I will attempt to infiltrate the Hulijing labs to obtain a sample of a change agent capable of genetically altering live human beings. You once briefed me on the Hulijing and mentioned that the Nine Tails, the Hulijing's inner circle, regularly die off. I now know that the Nine Tails are not dying. They are constantly changing. I suspect they genetically edit themselves and slay others from among the many slaves they traffic to take their places. Thus, you will not ever be able to bring a case against the Hulijing leadership. Focus on the chromatophores in their skin. This is their identification. This will provide the key. I have reason to believe the Hulijing are the remnants of an illicit biodefense project named False Apollo, shut down in 2032. Sergeant Yi should be able to access records for it. It was created with the cooperation of powerful organizations and/or governments with the goal of creating a universal defense against human extinction. I'm concerned that the Hulijing might have perverted this goal for some much darker purpose. I'm going to destroy this device after I send this message, but I will contact you again from a different address if I survive. I trust you to pursue this matter with discretion and dedication, no matter what my fate. I wish us all luck. Sincerely. He left the signature blank, encrypted the message, and tapped send. After it was confirmed, he removed his LFP glasses and bent them in two. He turned to Frey. Yours too. Destroy them. They won't allow devices in there, and we don't need the scrutiny. Frey sighed. He pulled off the LFP glasses, and Durand twisted them into wreckage for him. They looked out at the downtown. It was weirdly posh, with towering, architecturally exotic office buildings, but streets far too wide and empty. They saw only army vehicles and high-end luxury cars like their own on the road, and not many of these either, nor a pedestrian in sight. Thet's voice came in over the intercom.
We are arriving. Good luck, Mr. Durand, Dr. Frey. I will look for you when you are ready to depart. It has been my pleasure knowing you, gentlemen.
They both nodded to Thet through the etched partition glass. The Maybach turned down a cobblestone drive leading to an office tower, outlined in organometallic light. A trefoil knot logo glowed from nearby shrubbery. Soldiers in body armor with long guns and guard dogs roamed everywhere. The Maybach stopped under a marble portico, the armored doors unlocked. A suited valet opened the door and tipped his doorman's hat to Durand as he got out.
Good evening, sir. Your invitation, please.
Durand bumped his invitation fob against a pad the valet held out to him. The man glanced at an unseen screen, then smiled.
Very good, sir.
Frey got out next to Durand.
Through those doors, gentlemen. The reception staff will assist you.
Our car?
We know which car you arrived in, sir. We will summon your driver when you are ready to depart.
Durand looked down at Frey. They both straightened their ties, then walked up marble steps along a red carpet runner, moving past lines of soldiers in randomized digital camouflage and carbine helmets, standing to attention on either side. The soldiers appeared ethnically diverse, but had a definite Soviet-era vibe. Staring ahead, unseeing. Automatic rifles slung across their chests, at the ready. There were scores of them. The glass lobby doors opened, and Durand and Frey crossed a surprisingly gaudy lobby, again lined with 24 heavily armed soldiers standing at attention. A red carpet led down its length. At the end of the carpet stood an imposing reception desk of black marble. The trefoil knot symbol was set in brushed gold on the wall behind it. There was room to pass on either side. Standing before the desk in a full-length black gown and gloves was a gorgeous young blonde. She wore a diamond necklace whose jewel-encrusted pendant was also fashioned into a trefoil knot. She smiled as they approached.
Good evening, gentlemen. Welcome.
Frey nodded happily.
Good evening, young lady.
Are you seeking personal or third-party revisions this evening?
Durand and Frey looked at each other, then the woman. They spoke in unison. Personal.
Very good. I see that neither of you are wearing electronics. Please be aware that no phones, cameras, or other recording devices are allowed anywhere within this facility. It is important that this rule be observed closely, and there will be no exceptions. Do you understand?
They both nodded.
Excellent. Allow me to assist you with your marker.
She gestured to Durand's handcuffed case and patted the black marble countertop.
Please place and open the case here, sir, and unlock the cuff.
Durand placed the attaché case on the counter. He then produced a key to unlock the cuff, and clicked in a code to unlock the case itself. He then turned it toward her. As he did so, she deftly slipped a carbon fiber bracelet around his wrist, fastening it on him like a concert pass.
This device will identify you to staff members as well as track your movements throughout the facility.
She flipped open a cover to reveal a button.
If you have a need of a staff member for any reason, simply tap this button. If you attempt to remove or tamper with the device, it will send out an alarm.
She smiled.
You don't want that.
She viewed the contents of the ruby-filled case with the indifferent eye of someone accustomed to seeing vast wealth. She then wrapped a companion bracelet around the attaché case handle.
We will scan your gems for clarity, cut, and size to determine their value. It will only take a few moments.
She handed the case to another young woman in a gown who emerged from a side door. She then turned to Frey.
Your right wrist, please, sir?
Yes, of course. Frey reached up, clearly enjoying her attention.
Miss, has anyone ever told you that you are the spitting image of a young Margot Robbie?
She smiled.
I should think so. I have 99.993% of her DNA.
Frey laughed good-naturedly.
You naughty girl.
She turned to Durand and motioned for him to look into a nearby wall-mounted glim.
Here is your balance, sir.
He followed her gaze and saw the number $40,293,083 floating in mid-air next to the words, on account. Durand cast a steely look her way. That's about 3 million short by my calculation. She smiled brightly.
You may, of course, depart with your jewels, sir. But this is the sum our systems are prepared to credit for what you've brought us today. Rubies are, after all, not as portable or fungible as cryptocurrencies.
Durand waved her off. Fine, I'll accept it. She smiled again.
You are all set for consultations on personal revisions.
She gestured.
Please proceed to the elevator and enjoy your time with us.
Frey grinned broadly. I'm sure we will. Durand and Frey walked around the massive stone reception desk and found a single elevator card done in mirrors and brass waiting for them. They entered, and the doors closed. As expected, there were no buttons. It began to ascend. Frey sighed.
Well, we've just been relieved of $40 million. Macau isn't half as efficient.
Durand turned to see the view through the glass wall behind them. Frey fished in his pocket for a moment and then produced a small chip case. He extended it to Durand.
What's this?
Some data you're going to need. Your original genomic sequence digitized. Durand took the chip and held it in the palm of his alien hand. On the device was the key to getting back to himself. Frey pointed. Durand looked out at the city falling away beneath them as the elevator rose quickly and silently. Frey no longer seemed festive.
Ken, no matter what happens tonight, I want to thank you for bringing me here, for bringing me this far.
Durand nodded. The elevator slowed, and then the doors opened on the 50th floor. Chapter 40. They emerged into a marble hall with crystal chandeliers and wood-paneled walls. A 6-foot-high vase, overflowing with fresh tropical flowers, occupied the center of the room. Standing nearby was a tall, thin, Caucasian man in his 30s in a dark blue suit with flowing red hair. He had the orderly look, sharp features, and suave manner of a professional cocktail party guest.
Gentlemen, welcome. You may call me Tomas.
He had a slight French accent.
I will be escorting you to your consultations and answering any questions you may have along the way.
Frey nodded.
Good evening, Tomas.
I hear you are considering personal revisions.
Indeed we are.
Excellent. I, too, have undergone considerable revision, and I could not be happier.
Have you?
Durand and Frey exchanged looks. The man had a striking, though not classically handsome, appearance. He nodded.
I realize I look rather unique. However, Thomas Jefferson has been a lifelong passion of mine.
Thomas Jefferson?
Yes. The DNA was not easy to obtain, I assure you.
Before Durand could answer, a young Scarlett Johansson pushed past him, arm in arm with a young Charlize Theron. Both ladies wore sequin gowns, jeweled necklaces, and white gloves. Frey pivoted to watch them go.
Good Lord!
In backing up, he nearly collided with a half-dozen more Scarlett Johansons, laughing and smiling as they moved past and around him, entering a crowded lounge. One of the Johansons turned around and leaned over to pinch Frey's cheek. She said with a thick Asian accent,
"You adorable!"
and moved off. Frey pointed.
That was a flock of Johansons.
Tomas watched them go.
Yes, some of our most popular third-party revisions. For best results, we recommend using a source individual who is a native speaker of your desired language.
Frey kept pointing.
Young Scarlett Johansons.
Of course, the age is dependent on the age of the recipient.
Tomas gestured, ushering them to the entrance of the lounge area. The room was furnished with a series of sofas and armchairs and a grand piano, where a pianist played jazzy, festive music. Standing or sitting on divans were multiple Hollywood and Bollywood celebrities, K-pop stars, and more, with multiple copies of each. Laughing and sitting among them were a few older men, Arabs, dour-looking Yakuza or triads in business suits, and an Eastern European man in a ridiculously ornate military uniform. Frey stared in amazement,
Who on earth is this for?
Tomas stood next to them at the edge of the room.
We do not judge here. Slavery is perfectly legal in certain jurisdictions. Likewise, some willingly surrender their identity to further career goals. Our third-party revision team is able to accommodate almost all interests.
Of course, they can offer secure confinement for involuntary revisions where necessary.
Such is the world.
Durand stood in shock at the doorway. Frey recovered his senses first.
Where do you get the source DNA?
We have an extensive collection network and keep up with popular tastes by monitoring social media. If there is a public figure you desire, we most likely have their DNA in our database.
Durand did a double take at a young Brad Pitt wearing a leather jacket and leaning on the edge of a baby grand piano. The real Brad Pitt was in his 80s. Next to the young Pitt stood a line of Pitt variations, a Latino version, an African, an Indian, and then an Asian Brad Pitt. There were a few flavors of Denzel Washington nearby, too, all chatting amiably.
We can accommodate different tastes for different markets.
Anyone you control can be customized to suit your tastes. Robed sheiks and the military dictator seemed to be eating up the own-your-own-celebrity pitch. Durand felt numb. Did people want to look like movie stars? Perhaps some people did. Did the celebrities have any idea their DNA had been stolen? He guessed not. Looking around the room at the faux celebrities, he wondered who these people were born to be. Would their own mothers ever recognize them again? How did parents react to having their genetic legacy discarded like a coat? Durand felt a tug on his sleeve. He looked to see Frey motioning him onward. Durand followed down the main hallway and away from the third-party lounge. Frey walked alongside Tomas.
How long do those types of revisions take?
It varies greatly. The celebrity transformations you see here were quite significant. 2 years or more to safely effect the required DNA edits. Some will be going to clients soon. But as with any genetic procedure, there is a minor risk. Toxic shock, hemorrhaging, mutation. Mutations can be corrected in most cases. We have strict quality control.
The broker brought them into a room where 3D computer models of the nude bodies of young men and women spun in place, while much older clients pointed at various features. A technician made adjustments, and the image changed, either pleasing or displeasing them.
It is a common complaint of our clients that their servants do not match their preferences. These servants can now be customized like any other prized possession.
Durand looked on as a technician modified the computer model of a young Southeast Asian woman like Clay.
As you can see, gentlemen, we modeled the edits using our proprietary bioinformatics systems and then prepared the reagent to your precise specifications. You'll learn more about the process during your own consultation.
Frey nodded vigorously.
Yes. As you can imagine, I am eager to make some revisions.
Very good. Our genetic engineers have worked such wonders before.
Please, follow me.
He brought them through double doors and into a richly adorned corridor. The doors closed behind them as they walked.
You gentlemen may not be aware that certain legal aspects of the international genetic market are changing.
Durand cast a suspicious look at the man's back.
Changing? How so?
Our partners, large biotech consortiums, have for years been gathering genetic data from billions of human beings. This has been the Trefoil Lab's mission. Other partners have been gathering and storing genetic data on untold numbers of flora and fauna.
He looked back at them.
You should invest now.
I would invest more if I could. You are fortunate to be men of means.
Invest? In biotech?
No, in genomic sequences.
Durand and Frey looked at each other.
I would immediately purchase my own genomic sequence at the very least.
He glanced back again.
Before someone else does.
Personally, I'd rather own a slightly inferior genetic sequence than lease a more desirable one.
Durand narrowed his eyes.
What in hell's name are you talking about? The Treaty on Genetic Modification is a relic.
Live editing will render germline editing moot. Genetic edits can be reversed, even in mature organisms. The TGM is a dead letter, and quite soon.
Frey interceded as he apparently noticed Durand was getting agitated.
Humor me here. What exactly are you saying?
The international legal groundwork is being laid, copyrighting and patenting genomic sequences for proprietary algae, bacteria, and yeast organisms, the factories of the Fourth Industrial Revolution.
What does that have to do with human beings?
DNA is DNA, merely information. Which means that human beings are merely information, and there is a long-established legal precedent that information can be owned.
It took everything in him to keep his tattoos from appearing. Durand felt them rising along with his rage. He stepped to the side, turning against the wall.
Are you okay, sir?
Yes, I'm fine.
Frey was right at his elbow, casting a dark expression his way.
Just the travel. It upsets my stomach.
Durand calmed himself and stood straight. That weakness can be fixed. Tomas pushed open a heavy wooden door.
Smart people will make certain to own and copyright their bloodline. 51% ownership in a certain sequence of DNA would be a controlling interest.
There are all sorts of fractional ownership scenarios.
Durand said, Slavery 2.0. The broker turned to him.
Ah, except that it requires no reference to species, merely sequences. One merely owns information. If that happens to define a human being, then that human being was not very smart not to own himself.
Durand realized that the theft of his own identity was almost minor compared to what was occurring here. Chapter 41. They arrived in a beautiful lab with tropical hardwood cabinets and marble floors and countertops. A middle-aged Eastern European woman in a white lab coat smiled as they entered.
Here we are. Our personal revision department.
Tomas put a hand on Frey's shoulder.
May I introduce you to your genetic counselor, Ms. Rita? She would bring you through the transformation process.
Rita smiled again.
Good evening, sir.
Frey looked a bit overwhelmed and smiled wanly. Tomas turned to Durand.
Unfortunately, your counselor is still with a client. However, he will be available quite soon. In the meantime, may I...
Frey grabbed Durand's sleeve.
Good. I mean, don't leave just yet. I'd like you here with me.
Durand spoke to Tomas.
I'll wait here.
Tomas spread his hands.
As you wish, gentlemen. I will return shortly.
Durand and Frey ignored his departure. The genetic counselor extended her hand to both of them in turn.
Gentlemen, it is a pleasure.
She examined Frey.
We are preparing edits for you today?
Yes. I'm going to let you guess what type.
She moved her hand. Glyphs in the ceiling and countertops beamed AR images of human forms and double helices of DNA into their retinas.
This is where we develop an editing plan to affect your desired revisions.
Frey looked around at the floating virtual objects.
How long does it take you to calculate the edits and their sequence?
It depends, of course, on the complexity of the revisions, but our photonic clusters can usually return complete edit solutions within an hour.
Frey looked shocked.
An hour? My God, I used to have to wait days for edits to proteins.
She laughed.
Now you're dating yourself. So, you were in the trade?
Frey shrugged.
I dabbled, but I never had a setup like this.
She smiled, looking around.
It's quite something.
She took hold of his hand gently.
I'd like you to see something.
She extended his index finger and guided it over to a device resembling a fingerprint reader. Frey winced at a slight sting and withdrew his finger.
Just a little blood and...
Suddenly, a rough 3D computer model of Frey's body appeared. It had no surface color, but was a gray graphical primitive, anatomically correct as it was. Well, that's rather personal.
Nothing I haven't seen before.
She adjusted controls on invisible displays, moving her hands in midair.
Let's give you some lifelike colorization.
Moments later, Frey appeared nude and in living color on screen. Now it's even more personal.
We will be addressing your achondroplasia first. You were able to distinguish my condition from... Our systems recognized the precise genetic error immediately.
She turned.
Would you like to see what you'd look like with it corrected? To see the man you were meant to be?
Frey's face flushed.
You can model that right now, here and now.
She smiled and tapped a virtual button. The floating AR model of Frey fluttered for several moments, and then a photographically detailed model of a handsome, well-proportioned man floated in space before them. Frey's hands began to tremble, and then tears flowed from his eyes.
That's me.
She checked invisible readings.
6 feet 2 inches.
She looked up.
My, you're a handsome fellow, with just a few genetic edits, too. Most of our clients aren't so lucky.
Durand could not help but be affected as Frey reached out toward his ideal self. Frey wiped his tears away. He tried to regain a professional air.
How many edits?
She studied an unseen screen.
Achondroplasia is a more interconnected malady than geneticists suspected. It took a lot of experimentation to follow the how many. 86 unique edits.
Frey nodded eagerly.
And that would cost how much? $5,633,000.
Frey stared at the image. Durand remained silent. The genetic counselor said,
You have more than enough in your account. We could explore additional improvements.
Frey simply stared, mesmerized. Tomas suddenly returned. He tapped Durand on the shoulder.
Hanif is ready for you now, sir.
Frey could barely take his eyes off the model. I need to take care of this, Brian. I'll be back. Frey still stared as Rita made small revisions. Brian. Frey looked up.
Yes. Yes, I will be here.
Reluctantly, Durand followed Tomas. Chapter 42.
I am most pleased to meet you. My name is Hanif.
The slim, middle-aged Indonesian man in a white lab coat studied Kenneth Durand's muscular frame.
My goodness, you look as though you have already had some refinements. Is this not so?
Durand didn't know what to do with this question, so he shook his head. I have very specific requirements. I want this. He passed Hanif the data chip Frey had given him.
What is this?
It's a complete genomic sequence. The man examined the chip.
You've brought a genomic sequence, sir?
Yes. That contains the letters of the person I need to be revised to. Hanif looked skeptical.
Is it a complete genomic sequence, or merely sequences you wish to edit?
It should be a complete genomic sequence.
This could be dangerous. We need to be certain there are no neurological...
Just load it. The genetic counselor sighed, and after manipulating some unseen screens, he slid the chip into a slot on the edge of the countertop. He waited for several moments.
Let's see what we have here.
He glanced up, and a gray, graphical primitive of a human form appeared before Durand. Even though it was similar to modeling clay, Durand could immediately recognize it as his old self. His heart raced as he watched it slowly revolve. Make it lifelike. Hanif was studying his screens.
What's that, sir?
I said give it a lifelike skin tone. Make it photorealistic.
Very well.
He clicked around, and finally, a virtual Kenneth Durand stood before him. Durand lowered his head. He was so close. He had come so far. He looked up and saw himself staring back for the first time in what seemed like an eternity. Hanif looked up from his virtual screens and jumped as if he suddenly had a Siberian tiger sitting before him.
My God! I deeply apologize, sir.
Durand gazed down at his hands and immediately realized his error. He looked at his reflection in the glass-fronted cabinets. His Huli Jing tattoos were all on display. Hanif was flustered.
Please, forgive me, sir. If this is a test, I assure you I am most loyal. I would never...
Durand held up his hand. Calm down.
But I do most humbly apologize, sir, if there is any doubt as to my loyalty.
Durand pointed at the image of himself rotating before them both. Do you see this?
Yes, I do see, sir.
Synthesize this into a change agent and do it immediately. Do you understand?
Yes, I do. I do very much, sir.
The man got busy.
Of course, I will need you to place your finger in the receptacle, sir.
Durand looked over to see an indentation in the counter with a green light flashing from it. He inserted his index finger and felt the barest pinch. Moments later, he saw an image of his current self, Marcus Wicks, floating right alongside Kenneth Durand. It was his internal struggle made visible.
There is some interesting overlap here.
Never mind the overlap. Just make me into that first one.
Yes, sir. I will prepare a change agent.
How long will it take?
To compute the edit plan or synthesize the reagent?
Both. Tell me the time for both. Hanif interacted with the unseen UIs.
It looks as though we have previous computations on file for this sequence.
He glanced up at Durand.
Of course. You must have transferred the other way. I see. This will save us a tremendous amount of time. We can merely reverse the previous edit plan. I should be able to synthesize the reagent in a couple hours. But then we would need to schedule the procedure, discuss a recuperation.
I want the change agent put into an auto-injector.
Into an ampule, sir?
Hanif gazed at the records.
Ah, like before.
Durand turned away from the image of his old self to stare at Hanif. He nodded. Yes, like before. As Durand walked around staring at the virtual images of Kenneth Durand and Marcus Wicks, he heard a beep and a security door behind him slid open. Durand turned to face it and noticed a corridor leading through a laboratory space. He glanced back and noticed that Hanif was focused on a virtual interface, clearly aiming to impress. Walking forward to the edge of the open door, Durand could see a green light on the door's security pad. He glanced down at the tattoos on the back of his hand and remembered what the elder monk had said about his tattoos being a three-dimensional key in ultraviolet frequencies, visible through his clothing then. Hanif spoke behind him.
I would not recommend such an aggressive pace of revision, sir.
He read a virtual display.
Oh my! How on earth did you survive this?
He looked back at the tattooed Huli Jing before him.
I do not mean to offend, and please forgive me, but I would suggest reducing the pace by at least 2/3.
Durand nodded. Fine. Just prepare the auto-injector. Hanif moved his hands over unseen screens.
I humbly beg your forbearance, but an admin code. Without it, the system will charge.
Durand held up his wrist and pointed to the carbon fiber band. Apply it to this account.
This is most...
Durand pounded the counter. Do it. The man's hands moved swiftly.
This is 11 million. Do it. Yes. Yes, sir.
I'll return.
Yes, of course, sir.
As he moved toward the security door, Durand removed the Vantablack glove from his jacket pocket and pulled it on over his tracking bracelet. He then moved through the security door, tattoos still prominent, and walked down the service corridor beyond. It apparently joined all the client consultation rooms to a central processing lab. Technicians and robots here worked in glass-walled labs to either side. Robotic arms moved ampules in and out of refrigerated units filled with rows of thousands more. As Durand passed each lab door, the red light on its security pad would turn green. He had complete access. Durand pushed into a glass-walled storage room occupied by only a robotic arm busy retrieving ampules from storage. The door chirped as he did so, and the robotic arm immediately ceased activity, pulling away into a corner. As he walked along the glass refrigerator doors, a glim in the ceiling found his retinas and began beaming AR information to him. Durand gazed at thousands of sealed glass ampules in racks, each filled with perhaps half an ounce of honey-colored liquid. Who were they meant for? The lights on the refrigerator doors also flipped from green to red as Durand passed. He finally stopped before one marked with the AR label, Involuntary Third-Party Revisions. The racks here contained ampules with auto-injectors. Durand opened the door and clinked around for a bit, and removed one marked with an inscrutable client code. As he stared at the AR label, it soon expanded into the image of an African man with accompanying physical stats. Durand held the ampule up to the light. He could see a short needle encased in glass on the nib end, like the old morphine injectors used in the military. Durand slipped the ampule into the side pocket of his suit jacket. Suddenly, there was the sound of a distant explosion. The ampules in the rack in front of him shivered. Durand looked up. The chatter of machine gun fire followed. He closed the refrigerator and exited the glass-walled lab, walking calmly and turning back toward the client consultation lab. The staccato crackling of multiple machine guns and booms of explosions echoed over the city. A larger explosion made the floor vibrate. Suddenly, Durand noticed several heavy-set suited security men move into his path in the corridor ahead. He walked forward confidently, imperiously, relying on his markings to complete his disguise. He gestured for them to get out of his way. Instead, they drew non-lethal weapons and aimed them at his chest, shock devices from the look of them. Durand slowed to a halt. Out of my way. He heard the door to a lab behind him open, and a familiar sensation of dread came over Durand. He heard more heavy footsteps and turned to see half a dozen security men there as well, non-lethal weapons also raised. These men parted as the familiar, uncanny sensation increased. Otto emerged from between them, wearing a charcoal suit with a red tie. His double Windsor as perfect as ever. However, he sported a slight bruise under his right eye. Mr. Durand. Even Durand's newfound calm during a crisis crumbled in the enantiomorph's presence. False Apollo. Otto's confident expression momentarily cracked. I have never liked that name. There is nothing false about me. Distant machine gun fire rattled. Otto stared at Durand, and then Otto's own tattoos faded into sight across his neck and the back of his hands.
Those marks don't belong to you.
Durand gazed down at his own hands. The tattoos burned on his skin. He felt hatred coursing through him. I didn't ask for them.
Nonetheless,
he stared at Durand but spoke to the guards.
Mr. Wicks wants to see him.
Another distant explosion. The guards moved in on Durand from both directions, hitting him with shock devices before he could rush them. His muscles frozen by spasms, Durand let out a howl of rage, but a dozen sets of hands grabbed him and held him down. He was soon zip-tied.
Otto, I know what you are.
Durand's face was pressed against the floor.
I know why they made you.
Otto said nothing. The security men dragged Durand away. As they emerged from the lab, he saw another group of men escorting a stone-faced Brian Frey down the corridor. Frey's own hands were also zip-tied behind him.
Brian!
Frey did not respond. He stared ahead as if catatonic. The doors to a freight elevator opened. There was room for them all. Chapter 43. The elevator doors opened onto a lavish rooftop patio area. Planted palms lined a walkway. Waterfalls flowed into pools of indigo-lit water. Swarthy men in navy blazers stood nearby, weapons ready. Behind them, the night sky was stitched by orange and green tracers. The echo of distant gunfire. The occasional flash and delayed boom of an explosion. The security escort pulled Durand and Frey past an empty rooftop cocktail lounge, up a series of short stone steps toward a viewing platform equipped with a covered telescope. Along the steps stood eight men, four to either side. They wore tailored business suits and ran the gamut of human diversity, from Asian to African to Caucasian to Latino. They all stared as Durand and Frey were dragged past. Each had Hulijing tattoos running along his hands, neck, and scalp. When Otto walked to the top of the steps and took his place there, Durand realized these were the nine tails of the Hulijing. Standing at the railing was a man in a red sweater and slacks. Smoke curled around him as he observed the city below. The security guards halted and pushed Durand and Frey down to their knees. Frey looked miserable, with his head drooping toward the ground. The man at the railing turned. He was in his 30s, his face giving hints of many different ethnicities. Durand had never seen someone so resolutely everything. The man's eyes were almond-shaped, but his complexion was fair. His hair was curled, but his nose aquiline, and he had a complement of Hulijing tattoos identical to Durand's. The man tossed his cigar over the railing and blew out the last of the smoke. In the distance, gunfire continued. The man approached Durand unperturbed.
Now, that's a face I haven't seen in some time.
He looked up.
Well done, Otto. Well done as always.
Durand hissed.
Wicks.
Wicks leaned down some distance away, hands on his knees.
You can't prove that.
He laughed. So did the nine tails around him.
But you? Well, sucks to be me.
His hands swept across the city view.
You're just in time to see the fireworks. Seems the locals had a bit of a plan. Completely pointless, of course. As you might imagine, we have people inside their organization. We can be anyone.
Otto handed Wicks a sheet of paper. Wicks laughed and held it up. It was the Interpol red notice with Durand's current likeness on it.
Interpol's biometric scan made it very easy to identify you. And, of course, Otto knew you were coming. So, all your long journey did was cost me billions of dollars in lost equipment and business. Do you realize how many people are looking for Marcus Wicks right now? He tossed the paper aside. Perhaps your own colleagues will identify your body.
They'll arrest you eventually, Wicks.
Wicks stared down on Durand. Arrest whom? And why? There isn't even a legal basis to arrest me anymore. In fact, I'm going to use your laws against you. He moved around Durand.
Laws are so inflexible. Personally, I find constant incremental change to be a tremendous advantage, both in nature and in business. I'm surprised you've made such a fuss about it. I gifted you my own original DNA. I'm like a father to you.
Rage caused Durand to struggle to his feet and against his bonds. Unseen hands pushed him back down. Durand seethed.
I came all this way just to get your DNA out of me.
Aw, you make me sad.
Change me back, Wicks.
Personal transformation is very much our business,
but in your particular case, I'm afraid that's not possible.
It's vital that you remain exactly the way you are.
Mr. Wicks has committed heinous crimes, and it's important that he face justice.
Wicks took notice of Brian Frey. Frey stared off at a remote dais on the roof. Wicks followed Frey's gaze toward two clawed, half-horse, half-eagle, pony-sized monstrosities growing on chains there.
Dr. Frey, I see you're admiring our latest product.
Frey stared in utter shock.
Hippogriffs.
You know your mythology. Wicks walked down the steps and halfway toward the beasts.
A hybrid of two distinct species.
Big seller with Arab sheiks.
They love these things.
Wicks leaned over to a nearby barrel and grabbed a raw piece of meat, which he tossed toward the hippogriffs. The monsters shrieked and clawed at each other, fighting for the meat, tearing it to pieces in seconds.
Unsurprisingly, they can't fly. Ancient people had no sense of aerodynamics. Sterile, unpredictable as hell, batshit crazy. It's their brain case, too small. Probably in constant pain. But then, after a certain age, aren't we all?
Durand shouted at the ground.
The world will put a stop to what you're doing.
Wicks laughed.
No, the world won't, Mr. Durand. Everyone wants to reinvent themselves. In this world of mass surveillance and constant tracking, who wouldn't want the chance to become a new person? After all, anyone of consequence has done one or two things they'd rather put behind them.
Wicks walked around behind Durand, gripping his shoulder.
That's true of you, too, I think, isn't it?
He leaned next to his ear.
How many people had to perish so you could be you?
Durand tried to pull away from Wicks's grip and from the memory of the people he'd killed or caused to be killed.
None of this would be necessary if it wasn't for the ubiquitous surveillance of the modern world. People used to be able to reinvent themselves the old-fashioned way, but now, I'm the only game in town.
You're changing people who have no choice.
The slaves, you mean? Very profitable. They tell me it's legal in some places, and soon enough, elsewhere too. And even if it isn't, who's to say I did it?
He thought for a moment.
In fact, I think you did it.
The law will back me up on that. Frey replied before Durand did.
Life without personal accountability.
Wicks turned to Frey. Frey met his gaze.
A bit like turning the entire world into an internet chat room, isn't it?
Wicks laughed.
Yes, certainly the powerful will no longer have to keep apologizing for their behavior.
Durand gritted his teeth again.
They're going to stop you.
Just then, a large explosion lit up the downtown area. Gunfire crackled, followed by several more explosions. Wicks walked toward the edge of the rooftop and surveyed the city.
Isn't this a charming country?
It's uncanny how many of my close associates are blood relatives to powerful men in the unstable precincts of the world. Blood has an almost mystical power over warlord cultures. Helicopter lights approached in the distance. Frey looked up at the approaching chopper. I'm surprised you're not sticking around, Wicks. Don't you have a squad of genetic super soldiers to protect you?
I'm not going anywhere, Dr. Frey. These attacks happen all the time. Didn't the insurgents tell you that? And, by the way, the world doesn't care about what goes on here. That's why this place suits us.
He surveyed the tracers arcing across the skyline. Then he turned back toward Frey.
And super soldiers? The whole super soldier thing is overrated. Biology is all about trade-offs. Great strength comes with great caloric and hydration requirements. And let's face it, bullets kill elephants, so what's the point of a super soldier?
Give me 20,000 skinny guys with AKs. We're making so much money, we can always buy more.
Speaking of money,
Wicks walked up to Frey.
I should point out that, although I cannot help Mr. Durand here, you, Dr. Frey, we can certainly help.
And you've got plenty of money on account.
Frey furrowed his brow.
I'd appreciate it if you did not toy with me.
Wicks motioned to a nearby guard and accepted a glim from the man. Wicks tossed it on the ground in front of Durand and Frey. Moments later, a glowing thermal image of Frey expanded in front of them. It was video of the moment Frey first saw his potential genetically corrected self in the lab. Red colors flowed through every corner of Frey's face in thermal view.
You see that, Dr. Frey? Right there. That is what joy looks like from a physiological perspective. Pure, unadulterated joy.
There's no concealing it.
Frey gazed longingly at the image of himself, viewing himself cured.
You're a genetic engineer.
You can be of use to us.
And what else do you have to look forward to? You are wanted everywhere in this world.
We could change that.
Frey stared at the image for several moments more.
Why not make a change, Dr. Frey?
Frey nodded, tears running down his face.
Yes.
Durand felt his heart sink. Wicks nodded to a guard, who lifted Frey to his feet.